This is Facing Fentanyl. Interviews with actual users.
That was my first encounter with fentanyl.
Their experiences.
My nose was to the steering wheel and I could barely stay awake.
But most importantly, the lessons leading them out to a place.
I'm the only person in that picture that's still alive today.
Where they can speak of what it is to be facing fentanyl. Drug and alcohol use has increased exponentially during the epidemic and afterwards. Asking for help is not only a stigma, but it is hard to guide someone as they journey towards recovery and prevention. La Jolla Recovery is a science-based detox and rehab that for over a decade has offered tailored programs for those seeking relief from substance use disorders. For more information or questions regarding addiction, visit lajollarecovery.com. That's L-A-J-O-L-L-A recovery.com. That's again, L-A-J-O-L-L-A recovery.com. This is a continuation of a previous episode.
What was the experience?
It was insane. It was great. I mean, honestly.
So very exhilarating, great. Very ecstatic.
Adrenaline, exciting, overwhelming euphoria. You can't even describe how. Because I mean, it's a rush of dopamine.
It's a stimulant.
It fries your dopamine receptors. It releases them. So you're overwhelmed with how good you feel. You feel like you can do anything. I'm really more of a crystal meth addict than fentanyl. But we'll get to.
That's really important because this all kind of comes together.
Yeah.
So, you know, some might be like, what does this have anything to do? It has everything to do with it.
Yeah.
Because exposure also determines sometimes certain consequences that we have.
Yeah.
Meaning that it sounds that someone who gave you access to nicotine also had access to other illegal substances.
Yeah.
So it's almost like if they have a menu, there's obviously going to be something that's a little stronger.
Yeah.
And perhaps sometimes cheaper.
Yeah.
So cost, sometimes you kind of go like, hey.
Yeah, cheaper than cocaine, which we were also doing, yeah.
So cost per experience, so you get to experience a lot of exhilaration, something very positive to the brain. The brain goes, this is positive, I want to do this again.
Definitely, but before that, there's the first, like, I guess, experience that I had of coming down was awful, depression, where you feel extremely low. I remember feeling that. So I wasn't trying to use crystal meth regularly. It just snowballs, you know.
So you were in a social circle where this is what's happening, you do it, but now you start noticing there's physical consequences after that big rush of
euphoria.
Of euphoria.
Yeah.
Now you start experiencing what is it to be in withdrawal.
Yeah, sleeping, and my family asking what's wrong with me, you know, why are you sleeping for days, you know, things like that.
And what did you say? Did they know that they start asking, like?
Yeah, they were definitely concerned, but what could they do? I mean, I just told them that I was tired, you know.
So some signs for anybody who knows when you're sleeping too much is not normal.
Yeah, definitely. We're poor parents thinking about all
your body's preparing.
Stuff. Yeah,
you're trying to make up for days that you're probably awake.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So you were mentioning cocaine, meth.
How does
fentanyl? By the way, fentanyl is now perhaps pervasively pretty much an everywhere.
The main one, yeah.
Right? The opiate epidemic, mm-hmm. which prescription pharmaceuticals has been a very big part of it. What was your first experience and how did you hear of it? And do you remember the space where you were at?
Yeah, the first experience was my one and only experience with fentanyl. And I overdosed. I was in jail. I was in a county jail.
What age were you at this moment?
This was completely, I was 33.
Okay, so we're talking from 15 to your 30.
Yeah, I've already had several, I've already gone through college, went through alcoholism, stopped.
You did finish college, by the way.
I did, barely, drunk and
so you still, Adderall, you're almost like, so Adderall.
Adderall.
Let's talk about Adderall, because I think
favorite.
That one.
So I got clean.
It's almost like, hey, this is, I'm going to finish my studies.
Right. So I got clean from crystal meth in my early 20s, and then I had already left college. I went back to college. I went to the U of A, and I was really focused on my career as a musician. I was practicing.
You're an artist. That's
yeah. And I was really focused on just practicing, playing music. And I was in a very competitive school at the time. It was like a conservatory. The music program at the U of A is very, very competitive. It's a great program.
So you were following, this is you're an artist, you were following your...
Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. And then, and so I'm working hard and I'm clean for the most part. I'm drinking also. And I don't know, I was able to kind of manipulate my psychiatrist into giving me Adderall because I heard it was like crystal meth. And I got maybe like 90 milligrams of Adderall per day, which is a lot.
Which is a lot. Before this, yeah. How did you hear about Adderall and why do people use it?
Through hearsay and through college kids, they were saying they could study for hours. That was the main thing. And that's why I wanted it. You could study for hours, I could practice for hours. Do college.
This is marketing. This is almost like, hey, and you wanna do well.
Yeah, and you don't. It's very competitive.
So it's not just driven by I want to feel good. You you need to finish. You want to do well too.
Yes.
Did you try Adderall before it was prescribed to you?
No.
No. Interesting.
I'd heard of it, but I had never gotten.
And you're like, hey,
that's not true. I had. I had a friend that had a prescription, he would sell me some sometimes.
It gets very common, by the way,
yes,
that somebody gets to experience it through somebody else's prescriptions.
Right.
How was that experience?
Yeah, I was able to focus. I was able to get all my work done. So I remember thinking, this would be great.
So like, I need this.
Yeah, and I would try. Most doctors wouldn't. This one guy kind of...
Also, you hear about this person.
Yeah. So
I got... Do you think he knew?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard different things. I don't know if... you know, if they get paid, I've heard things that they get paid sometimes from pharmacies by prescribing it. The more that they prescribe it, it makes sense. I don't know.
But regardless, you would have probably found it's almost like...
Yeah, but I got it for free and I got a large amount. So I would
you
get...
You got it for free?
Well, yeah, it was through my... I forget.
Oh, so it's your insurance.
Yeah, I had insurance at the time.
Got it.
And I was able to get a lot for free. And of course, I started abusing it.
So he started you on a very high dose.
The highest dose possible.
Did you notice the difference between what you had experimented in that high dose?
Yes, because it was a lot. It was 45 milligrams in the morning, which is a pill and a half. The highest dose is 30 milligrams and then 45 milligrams in the evening.
How?
And then he prescribed Klonopin, which is like a Xanax, on top of that.
Gosh.
And I was,
Is so there a reason for that? Do you remember why?
He said because the Adderall would make you anxious, and which it did. It's like, it's meth. So it would make me anxious, so he would kind of give me that to even me out. But it's horrible for your heart. It's like a speedball. He prescribed me a speedball, basically.
So a stimulant with a tranquilizer at the same time.
Yeah.
And now that you look back on it, how does this seem? Because
it ruined my life, really, in a lot of ways. It ruined. Yes and no. At the time, it ruined my life. I wouldn't do anything differently now, because I'm very happy where I'm at right now. But at that time, for what I was trying to do, it threw a wrench in it.
And I want
to
remind anybody.
But I'm the only person I'm the only person that's responsible for that because I sought it out. I manipulated this doctor give me the drug. So I take 100% responsibility for it.
That's amazing. And that's probably a big reason of why you're getting to live the life that you have today. I do want to remind to any listener, I'm talking to someone in a professional behavioral health center environment and seeing somebody who impacts people's lives in a positive manner, who probably you're exuding confidence. I'm feeling in a very comfortable environment and telling the story. I want to thank you for your vulnerability and openness, because this lets us learn about the system that we live in. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you know, because I kind of go, couldn't it have been amazing if a doctor knew about rehabilitation and how to communicate in a way? You might not be able to make somebody stop, but I'm kind of going, wouldn't it be nice if somebody just lays a little, you know, kind of like, hey, if you're having a hard problem or if you can't stop, don't forget to, I don't know, support groups, call an 800 number. And it sounds like that was not even within the objectives of a prescribing doctor.
Right, no.
It was like, let's give this person what he wants. It doesn't even cross their mind that this could cause an addiction, it sounds like. And by the way, the word is a substance use disorder, which is very humane. It shows you that it's not like you are or not. Most people are in a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you are prescribed two very strong medications, mm-hmm. which you say could... How was your experience after that?
So initially, I was able to really get a lot done, and I thought I had found the answer. But my being an addict, I was only able to use it in the way that it was prescribed mm-hmm. for maybe a semester or two at the most, and then I started abusing it mm-hmm. and staying up for days and taking five at a time, staying up for a week, and just going off the rails and crashing out. So
now, for somebody who might not know, when you stay up for many days, your body requires a lot of healing yes. and low down. And but there are also consequences to our mind and our perception. Are there starting to be lots of consequences now in terms of mental health, perception, your social circle? Is there starting to be like isolation at this time?
The opposite. Okay. The first year, maybe, but the first year that I was clean, I was in drug court.
Okay.
Which is basically probation on steroids. It's a very intense. When you commit a crime, if you don't have a record of criminality, they'll oftentimes offer you a program.
Nice.
Like drug court, which at the time that I did it, it was over a year. It was like a year and a half. It's incredibly difficult program. Instead of like doing 10 years in prison, I was high on meth and I broke into a I was breaking into houses, but I was out of my mind. Like I didn't really
remember this.
I knew what I was doing. It was a conscious decision, but at the same time I thought that I was like in a movie. I had like meth induced psychosis for a little while, but at the same time I didn't know what I was doing. Anyways, I got busted for breaking into a house, and that's a huge crime. That's a huge felony. They take it very seriously, and they give you quite a bit of time, like 10 years. So, which I almost did the time because I did not want to get clean at the time.
Really?
And I was thinking, this is, you know, I had done a little bit of time in the county, and I was thinking, I have this down. It's really not that hard. It's not like the fucking movies.
This is like 7 years ago. Fentanyl experience.
Yes, this is like 7 years ago.
Got it.
So now I'm in drug court.
You're in drug court.
So now I'm in drug court, and I'm getting clean, and I'm still trying to use, but I'm just using things that I could get away with. So I don't want to put the information out there, but I was using certain things that you could get away with that they don't test for, and I got caught. And once I got caught several times, but the last time I got caught, they sent me to jail for a week, right? And in that little week violation, somebody from another cell gave my cellie some free fentanyl. Just gave it to him.
Free fentanyl.
Just gave him a sack of it.
And this is inside jail, by the way.
This is inside county. It's all over jail. And we were excited.
How common is this?
Extremely common. Extremely common.
So you can get fentanyl inside.
And it's a really hot commodity because you could use it for money. You could use it for food. You could do. I mean, it's more. It's more important than money.
How do people bring it in?
They hoop it, which is they put it up. They put it up their anal cavity.
Got it.
Yeah.
So
nobody cares about that. They just want to get high.
But something tells me when you're not in a great place, especially jail, it must be very uncomfortable.
The feeling and the energy in those places is so it's just desperation and negativity and darkness. It's very very odd. It's very eerie. It's very very I don't want to say demonic, but it's very. It's just a very dark place, and you can almost smell it. You know, you can feel it as soon as you walk in. There's a very disgusting, thick energy, like where you feel like you can't even breathe sometimes.
I'm just amazed at how you can name this so clearly. It sounds like you've done so much healing.
Definitely. Oh yeah, definitely.
You're in a place. Yeah. Where you've had some consequences from some of the behavior many induced. Something tells me that there were probably some glimpses of I want to get better during these times. Are there small yeah. moments that you kind of go?
There's small moments.
I'd love to stop, yeah. but you can't.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely moments of that, but I'm very stubborn and very. I can be very arrogant, so I think like, well, I know I'm suffering these consequences, but I know that I can stop whenever I want.
So there's still this yes. idea of,
but I have
if
control.
I actually wanted to, yeah. I'd stop.
And I would be able to. I have been able to in the past to get things just together, so where I'm kind of just like getting by life, where I'm not. So I'm like comparing my, well, I'm not on the street, I could hold a job, I could do, so I'm not exactly an addict. You know, a lot of addicts do this, you know, where they justify it to themselves.
But it's also been many years yeah. of use, which affects our development, which
yeah.
affects how we process
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
behavior, reactions, our
like,
capacity
sure.
to self-regulate.
Yeah,
I'm not,
yeah.
like you were saying, I'm not trying to not place responsibility on what you did. But there's also a biological component, which even if we want to get help, will rationalize the continuing use for our own psychological safety.
Yeah.
It's scary to accept that we can't stop doing something, even though we want to.
That's good.
And the other part is, you're in an environment where it's so heavy that it's almost like anything but experiencing this. It's ironic that you want to get out.
Right. No. Yeah. So drugs in there.
And did you know? So you knew it was fentanyl.
Actually, no, I didn't. They said synthetic heroin.
And by the way, this is so common. Most people's first experience with fentanyl, many times they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They either think it's an opiate,
mm-hmm.
or they think it's anything else.
Right. No, it's true.
Now let's get to it.
Yeah.
What was the experience?
So, like you were saying, you want any kind of escape from that environment. And fentanyl, really, I mean, I'm in the lowest of the lows, and I'm feeling horrible. And I know that if I do this drug, there's going to be consequences as soon as I get out, because they drug test you as soon as you get out of your violation.
Mm.
But I did it anyways. And once I did it, immediately, I just felt relief. I felt so good. It's like, I can't even describe how good the feeling is that I was able to feel at home, even in that small, disgusting cell. I was able to even feel euphoric and peaceful and at home.
Wow.
Yeah. Where I just, yeah, it's incredible how strong that feeling is.
Sam, this is very common in people's experience,
yeah.
that for some, that sense of comfort, of home, of this relief of stress, maybe for many years. So you use something, you're at home.
Yeah.
That must be very ingrained in the brain.
In the worst environment, too.
In the worst environment.
There's violence going on. It's not clean. It's, you know, you're living with people that you don't really like or know. It's like, you know what I mean? You never feel like you have your life.
I hear that and it sounds scary. It sounds painful. It sounds resentful, angry.
Yeah, and then
so fentanyl, this is a solution. It's almost like a medication.
Fentanyl, yeah, takes away everything. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, so,
and you say you overdosed
time? My Sally, we did a line and then...
Oh, so inhaled.
No, snorted.
Snorted.
And then maybe about... 4 hours later, we woke up and we did another one, and then that's when we overdosed. And I was woken up by the guards. They had I guess both of us were completely like unconscious, and they Narcan'd us. And they Narcan'd me and woke me up.
Slight
yeah.
pause.
Yeah.
Narcan. Narcan is a medication that goes in the bloodstream and gets inside the opiate receptors and blocks the impact of fentanyl. This saves lives.
Yes.
It is also very powerful, meaning it can wake you up right away.
Yeah.
Was this with an injection or nasal?
Nasal. I was unconscious, so I'm not sure. But I believe nasal. I think that's what they told me. I'm not sure.
So what I'm also going is, this is Narcan and Naloxone is something that's very important for everyone in society to know about.
Yeah.
Because they had Narcan there, we get to have your beautiful, amazing person, you, which is so easy for somebody to connect this story to who you, but this is not, I'm looking at a completely different person, but the story is important. And talking about Narcan, I'm sorry I interrupted this, because Narcan is so important to talk about.
We should not
have anybody die from this. Because I'm seeing how impactful you are into people's lives, including mine. And because of that, because of this awareness, and we need to share it, is that we get to save a life.
Wow, your life
saved in that moment. And it's probably scary. You're like...
That's awesome. That's awesome what you just said. Just want to thank you for that. I was angry when I got woken up. I was pissed because I was... I was angry because I was high and I was feeling good.
Don't wake me up to this realization.
They were taking me to the ambulance, so they were going to make me leave jail. I didn't want a record of this. I was really angry about... I was thinking about my
probation. Any more consequences? Gosh, how is this going to impact me? I want out of this.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. And I didn't want to even use the fentanyl, but my addiction was so out of control at that time. I couldn't help it. And I knew there was going to be consequences. As soon as I was released from jail, they were going to drug test me. It was going to be in my system. But I could not help myself. And so that... And then the overdose, and now I'm walking handcuffed to the ambulance.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm thinking like, oh, now they're going to find out. I'm going to come back to jail and get kicked out of my program. And that's what it took. That moment is when I got clean. It was when I had enough.
So that was the window of time.
That was my breaking point.
What was it? What do you think was it?
Like all
you're
those
in,
things.
You're in chains, the entire situation. Walking towards an ambulance.
Not wanting to do the fentanyl, doing it because I couldn't help myself. I always felt like I had control over my addiction, but that showed me That showed me that I have no control. And that's step one. You know, that you're powerless.
You're talking about recovery now, the step one.
That's step one, and that was my step one. And I mean, I didn't know it at the time.
You didn't know it at the time.
I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it at the time. But that showed me, like, because I'm in handcuffs for a sanction on a completely different drug. I'm OD'd on a drug that I don't even do. And I'm here for a third one. I'm actually here originally for a completely different drug that I'm breaking. So being in jail, almost dying, all those other things combined, that's what it took for me to kind of look at myself and say, I'm pretty sure I have a problem. I think this is enough evidence that I need to make a change.
It's so beautiful to hear you laugh too, because we're getting to, again, just to bring us back to where we're at, we're in an office of a behavioral health center. This is part of your work. Yeah. You're respected, you're wanted, you're needed.
You
have a positive impact on people's lives.
Yeah, that's correct.
However, at that moment, for some, it's when they're intervened by their parents or they don't turn it into homework. That's enough. Sometimes a degree of separation takes this journey. How do you get from that point to here? Where does that curving, where does that...
I had lost actually touch with my family for many years, just because, you know, I was using and they probably knew it, and we had, you know, sort of kept in touch, but not like now where we talk almost every day. I have 100% support from them. And,
how does it feel to be connected again?
It feels good. It feels great to be just a person again, really. Just to be a regular person, to be happy just doing regular things.
It must be very hard for families who just don't know what's going on.
Yeah, definitely.
And I guess sometimes it's healthy for parents. I mean,
it's a lot of pain for them. It's a lot. That's something that I think about. I have a lot of guilt about all the pain I've put them through. And I really get to see that in this job when I see family members of clients that I see, like, the pain in their eyes. Mm-hmm. It's when you see, when you could feel it, and it's like, fuck, I've done this to my mother, to my own mother, mm-hmm. to my own father, to my brother. You know what I mean? I've put them through through what I'm seeing these guys are putting them through. So, I get to see it, I get reminded of it.
You have a lot of empathy and compassion.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you're getting to see almost like a reenactment.
And a good reminder.
So today you have this connection, which takes time, by the way. This has been years in sobriety that you've experienced. How did you get from the chains to the first asking for help?
So I knew I was done right then. I knew I was done. And then I go back to my program, and I did something that...
Were you given the option to go to a program, by the way?
Yeah, I was already in a program during this.
You chose this. You said, I have a problem.
I told on myself. Which I've never done.
Did anybody share with you, like in jail, did you hear about meetings? Where did that glimpse come?
I had already been in drug court, so I'd already been exposed to recovery.
So you knew what it was about?
Yes, that wasn't but I your wasn't time, taking it seriously.
But this though. One was like...
This one made me take it seriously, correct.
I mean...
Yeah.
And that must be a big, when you come in with open arms, it probably becomes easier, meaning that
that's
you're
when
like,
everything connects. Yeah, and if you don't,
I want
if you don't
sponsor.
Have that, yes, if you don't have that, you're not gonna.
You're at a rehabilitation program.
I'm in drug court, which is in Chula Vista, South Bay Drug Court, and then I got sent. I told on myself to my counselor.
You're like,
I told him I need help.
But they know, right? Like when you're open and honest.
Oh well, they knew I was there for a certain. They knew I was there for a relapse, but they didn't know about my fentanyl OD. And I told them about it. I told them I needed help, and they sent me to a different rehab, which I don't know if can I say the name?
Whatever you feel comfortable. So you go to another.
I go to
treatment
another
center.
Treatment
Something
center.
Tells me that they probably also you wanted know, to take care of the detox.
Yeah, it's a government. I mean, it's a county-run rehab, and it's out in like a reservation. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's beautiful, and I got some.
But that's really amazing that there's that we have these options. Because some people kind of go like, why do we have these government services?
And no, it's great. Yeah,
it's nice to have places.
I was forced to go. Didn't want to. Just being honest with you. And nobody wants to leave their house. Nobody wants to leave their, you know what I mean, their situation.
Especially, I knew, it's like a wilderness program or just separated from.
Yeah, I knew that I needed help, so I was willing to give it I was willing to try it, and thank God I did. And I was able to get my first, step working there, recovery. I got my first,
So you start working your steps.
Exactly. Yeah.
For somebody who doesn't know, this means working with either a professional or a person who's close to the facility to get to have a little more insight to self.
Yeah, sort of. Somebody that knows the big book and the steps really well.
To those who don't know, the big book is the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It has that nickname because it used to be a larger blueprint.
Right.
And it's fondly called the big book by those who... So 12-step programs, a place where you start your healing.
Yes.
You get 100%. To be honest with another human being, which is
sponsor,
very soothing probably during this life.
We did it in a group setting, and then I worked with them one-on-one also, and we just work on the steps. It's really not rocket science. It's not like, you know, and...
But something tells me you start feeling the change and the connection.
I was ready. I had that near-death experience, and I was ready, you know, so... I was open enough to receive all the messages.
Was it good to be away, meaning that you get to have a little space to just really focus on you?
Yeah.
So for anybody who hears this, treatment, rehabilitation is very important. And withdrawal, something tells me, like your receptors from the fentanyl experience probably take a time to get used to your own chemistry.
Yeah. Probably,
Food, sleep, wake, socialization from people who aren't wanting to hurt or use. You're around people who actually care.
Yeah.
And that must be, it's nice to be reminded that we're human beings as opposed to like surviving organisms.
Right, definitely, 100%, yeah.
So you're in this place, mm-hmm. What comes after?
I go back to my program, my original program.
Okay.
Which was, yeah.
You're like, okay, we just want to make sure you had a little more help.
Exactly. That's what they do when you mess up, basically.
And it probably also has a lot to do with fentanyl and detoxification. They want to make sure that you get a little bit more time.
Right, right. So I was in drug court for like almost 2 years.
It was 2 years.
Yeah. What because do you think, I kept relapsing.
What do you think of drug court and the program?
It works. It saved my life. I have a lot of respect for people that come into privately owned rehab.
Yes.
I was told that I needed to go. You know, family always wanted me. I always refused.
You could have, but it just that
I
was
always refused it. I had to be forced. You know what I mean? I had to be basically told, okay, well, you could either do like 10 years in prison, or do this program outside.
And you thought about it. You were like,
I even thought about it. Yeah, my mother and sister came and visited me in jail, and just were like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
And there's beautiful stories from that too.
Yeah, they slapped sense into me. They said, "What the fuck are you doing? Like, what you're thinking about doing time? That's not you.
Parents
that's not
or your, loved yeah, ones. If you ever you. Have a loved one who's also considering yes. doing." That's no. good to push them to the other side.
That's what they did. It was great.
And, so you go through 2 years of the drug court.
Yeah, it was hell. It was very tough. It was if you don't have a car, I thank God I had a girlfriend that was very supportive. She would give me rides, but without that, I don't know how some of these guys do it because they're getting up at like 8 a.m. and they're going to program until like 1, and then they're taking the bus all day, and then they're going to wash dishes from like 3 to 9, and they're coming home
drenched
in water and sometimes
in sweat.
Yes, and then taking the bus home, and you're just it's very, very grueling, very difficult program to do.
So you have to go through this.
But it kept my mind off of you don't have time to really feel bad for yourself.
What kept you going? The community, the recovery community?
Yes, not wanting to go back to jail probably was the main one. And I went back to jail several times during this program. I relapse or okay. They send you to jail for anything though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're testing you, so
if you're late to group or a few times, they'll send you for a weekend. Yeah,
it's a little stressful to them.
Very stressful. Very stressful. Very
so you relapsed too?
And I just happened to have the one counselor who was the most stressful. Just the way life works. He was the most strict.
So you survived that.
He was great. I want to give a shout out to Jermaine Harnish. He was awesome, dude.
Thank
he
was you awesome. For those people who.
Yeah, he was awesome.
So it sounds really like tough love did help you for a little bit. It doesn't always help everyone, but in your case,
he was the one that I told on myself too. He's the one that sent me to Freedom Ranch. He's the one. I mean, he really made me look at my. And I've been able to kind of get away with a lot of shit, and there was no getting away with bullshit with Jermaine. He really was good at not letting you con him, and that's what we do. You know what I mean?
And he probably has some good experience, kind of.
Yeah, he's been through it all himself. Mm.
So it's amazing that people who do recover sometimes stay in that line of work.
Yeah,
that's kind of he's been paradoxic. Through awesome. This is something that you.
Yeah, he would always say, "I get to see myself at this job. I get to save lives, and I get to see myself."
So you have some slips during drug court.
Many, yeah.
And
mostly behavioral. Actually, yeah.
So would you say recovery is also not about just using? It also has to do with healing and our. Where do you 100%. Think a lot of that healing came, or role models that you had? Sponsors, community. Tell us a little bit about your healing, because I'm just in awe of the person that you are today.
Support system, definitely my support system. I had a daughter, and she's 2 now. That changed my life also. Mm. That was a huge change in my life. I quit smoking. I mean, everything changed once she was born.
So there's this realization that you want to get healthier for her.
I was already on that path. She just kind of put the nail in the coffin.
Who were some of your role models? Meaning that what are some of these male figures that get to where we get to? Because I'm thinking it's learned, right? You get to see responsible men or someone who's sober.
My father's a good father. All my uncles.
So now that you're close.
Yeah, my brother was also a very responsible father. I think just like, just in general, my counselors, definitely.
How many years of sobriety has happened since that incident into the story now?
4 years. I've been clean for 4 years, yeah.
4 years. How do you get from there to here? What would you tell someone who's saying, How can I get better? And by better, not just not drinking or using.
So patience is the most.
So this is going to take time.
It takes so much time. I needed drug court for 2 years. Most people don't do it. It doesn't take that long. A lot of people, it just depends. Anyways, I needed to be held accountable for at least 2 years.
A little longer than
that. Yeah, at least 2 years. And so I think this rehab is for 3 months.
Okay.
That wouldn't have worked for me, and it won't work for a lot of
people. So there's for someone who perhaps has had a long-term substance use disorder with either stimulants or opiates, it might require a little bit more time.
I think that's more accurate. Yeah, if you have a longer history, I think you probably need more time. If you don't have as much long, you probably don't need a year.
It takes time to physically heal.
Takes time to heal, and you're depressed at first, especially if you've been using.
This is really important. Mental health.
You're in horrible shape.
So getting better sometimes doesn't mean feeling better.
Right. No, that's good. Yeah, that's opposite. Yeah, definitely opposite.
So
yeah.
If you're completely sad and are wondering what's your purpose in life every day that you're waking up in recovery, that's common.
Yeah, and I don't know.
What do you hang on to? Was medication-assisted treatment offered in these places?
No.
Or were you more in the roughing it out
More for roughing department. It out. I was on... Wellbutrin for a little bit. That didn't really
awesome. So antidepressants.
Antidepressants. Yeah. Definitely.
Which can save some people's lives, right? It can feel horrible the first. What would you say? Like the first year, first 2 years, sometimes.
Yes, the first year.
So
or two,
recovery. Don't expect pink clouds.
At first, a little bit.
Okay.
At first, everybody goes through that. You see it when they first got into drug court and they're sharing in group. Everybody's on got this. I feel great, and then life starts catching up to you and. That's where you're tested.
So you have moments of pink cloud. Where do you get the hope for the rough times?
Definitely your support system, people that the connections you're making at meetings, rehab centers like this, the faculty here, things like that.
So treatment works. So important for people to understand. It's not just definitely a ringer. Something tells me you do a lot of service. You help a lot, sometimes outside of your norm.
Yeah,
I'm getting this from you, and I've also been hearing that this is a passion for you.
Yes, I like helping.
So making recovery such a priority is very key.
Yeah, definitely. You have to be, because a lot of the clients, they I don't want to say they look up to you, but they look at you as an example.
They want to be
where you're at. So they're looking at you as an example. And so you have to walk the line. You have to.
I would be too.
Yes.
I see in your eyes, you're calm, you're fulfilled. It's also probably, you can also have a tough day. You have a community of peers that love you, want you, need you.
Yeah. There's definitely rough days, yeah.
I'm inspired by your story, Sam.
I want to thank you for sharing your story.
Before we end, what would you recommend to someone who's just listening to this podcast about what is fentanyl? It sounds like it's everywhere. It can happen to you by a roll of a dice. So it's not something that people from an arrow go and want to do. So for parents to be aware, carry Narcan. If there's something that we take from this is
education.
Be aware of what Narcan naloxone is. If you can have it, even if your kids, even if your family doesn't do it, we can save a life by having it.
In terms of saving a life, I would say know exactly what drug you're doing. If someone asks, use the word fentanyl, is this fentanyl? Because I think a lot of times, like you said earlier, people use it, they don't know that they're using it. And that's actually why I OD'd also. I would have used a lot. Everybody knows to use a very little amount. I didn't know it was fentanyl. And I didn't ask, though.
This is very common. Because there's this misconception that, people are, give me that fentanyl. It's like, this can be an accident. So be ready for that accident. We have Narcan, naloxone. The other thing is treatment works.
Exercise. Exercise is huge. I got into...
By the way, you look super fit.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All this energy. It sounds awesome.
I work out every day. It's saved
my... Recovery.
It's one of the
12-step
main thing that
community
keeps me. You can't do crystal meth and lift weights. You know what I mean? It's not going to work. You got to eat. So it's like, I don't even... Yeah.
Thank you, Sam. This is so inspiring.
I'm
so moved.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for sharing this story, which, by the way, the only reason we go to the past is to humanize this story.
This helped me a lot, too, put a lot of things in perspective,
May you continue saving people's lives and inspiring others like you did me. Thank you.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, La Jolla Recovery, before getting back to our interview. La Jolla Recovery is an alcohol and drug treatment center in San Diego, providing evidence-based solutions to addiction for over 12 years. The pandemic has impacted mental health immensely, and if you're wondering whether a loved one or yourself might be using a substance beyond recreation or fun or social bonding, La Jolla Recovery wants to answer all your questions in a private and confidential manner at lajollarecovery.com. That's LAJOLLA recovery.com. That's again LAJOLLA recovery.com. This is Facing Fentanyl.